No, but this guy had a lot of great ideas for restaurants. But they, you know, some they were so messed up, he could never get anyone to invest in them. And I have to agree, look, some of these are pretty stupid. Like this pizza chain he wanted to open that only hired people with disabilities, which seemed nice at first until I heard that he wanted to hire only short people, 5 feet or under, that suffered from epilepsy. And he wanted to call it Little Seizures. I mean, that's idiotic. Hey, what's happening? Welcome back. You know that saying, time will tell? Well, time is telling the shit out of this whole Bourdain story. Information just seems to slowly ooze out, and we can begin to piece this whole thing together little by little. And I'm not obsessing about this. This was a big thing, as you well know. It took me by surprise, and it's taken me a while to kind of consume it all. Most of us kind of sensed that Bourdain's suicide had something to do with his relationship with his girlfriend, Asia Argento. Now, he had a daughter, which, you know, look, if he didn't want to live for anything else, I figured he was going to live for her. So there were two things that I felt could propel him to want to take his own life: depression or shame. And as I've said before, I was leaning on depression. You know, maybe he'd lived all the life he wanted to live. He was tired of doing what he was doing. You know, things weren't going as well as he wanted with his girlfriend. Or, you know, his demons were coming to visit more often than they were before. And he couldn't take it. But with the information that's come out in the past month and a half, now I'm thinking maybe it was shame and embarrassment. Two things I don't think Bourdain was prepared to handle in public. As the story goes, this young actor who had performed in a movie with Asia years ago claimed that she forced him to have sex with him when he was a teenager in her hotel room. They appeared in a movie years ago where she was a teenage mom and he was her son. And they were close. And he even posted a picture of them in bed together. Now, when she came out last year in this Me Too movement and made such a splash, he contacted her and threatened to go public with this claim. Now, this was the worst possible situation for her and for Bourdain, who fought alongside her in public and on social media. I mean, they were, they were nuts about this. So they found texts and emails between her and Bourdain where Bourdain said that she could offer him some hush money to keep him quiet. I don't know the specifics. Maybe she didn't want to pay up or couldn't afford to. Bourdain ends up hooking her up with his attorney. Things go back and forth, and Bourdain ends up paying this kid $250,000 of his own money to keep him quiet. Now, I'm not saying this has anything to do with Bourdain killing himself, but where there's smoke, there's fire. And from piecing this story together, his house was burning down. You know, he's caught in the middle of this hypocrite story, pays the kid off with his own money, then a month or two later, she's photographed in public, holding hands and being romantic with this younger guy. You don't have to be Sherlock Holmes or Columbo to put two and two together in this case. I think this bitch hosed him, and he knew that sooner or later it would get out. He felt used. It drove him into depression. And she theoretically tied the noose for him. Now, I'm still not over this. The reality of Bourdain no longer being on this earth with us is still sinking in. It's a loss I'm not sure I'll get over for a while. You know, losing Katrina sucked, and I still miss her. Losing Bourdain 5 years later sucks, and I know I'm going to continue to miss his contributions and the inspiration that he gave me for a long time. And this is what I was talking about when I said that I felt like my life was beginning to shrink. I'm getting older. I'm getting slower. My body hurts all the time. My personality is changing. I don't have the energy I used to have. I don't drink anymore. I don't feel like I'm as fun as I used to be. I try. I'm not as easily inspired as I was before. People around me are dying. Batali is an admitted predator. You know, what the fuck is going on here? This was supposed to just sail along smoothly, right? Natural progression until we all just get old and slow and become irrelevant. Unfortunately, and I tell my stepdaughters this all the time, life doesn't always go as planned. In fact, it rarely goes as planned. Life is full of shitty surprises, twists, turns that derail your agenda and force you to pivot. The problem for me right now is that after all I've already been through in my life, I don't feel like pivoting as much as I used to. So this is a fucking bummer.
The food delivery to North Hollywood High has a few extras this year as they're offering a new menu with vegan options.
A bean tamale. We're going to have a vegetarian chili that has different types of beans in it.
Plus a vegan teriyaki burger, range-free burger, and Italian sausage sandwich.
We're finding out that there are students who are vegan that do not eat meat. And this is just another way in which we're trying to make sure that we're accommodating all our kiddos.
LAUSD already has Meatless Monday and a vegetarian meal daily, but the district felt it was time to offer something to students who want vegan options. But it's no easy task sourcing animal-free food for the second largest school district in the country.
Just because something is vegan doesn't mean it's delicious. So that was the challenge. We had to find something that was vegan, but also that kids like.
So it's the district's job to provide tasty vegan options. It's the students' assignment to provide feedback as a guideline so they know what to offer once the pilot program ends.
How quickly, or if we want to expand it to other schools.
There's a big taste test Thursday with bite-sized samples of the vegan items. The pilot program starts September 5th at 7 LAUSD high schools that runs through November 17th. The meat substitutes are soy-based and soy milk is offered, but there's also salads, veggie sides, fruit, and bean menu items for those who are soy intolerant.
You know, people get stupid over food wars. You know that? Now, we've been talking about this for years, too. You can't mention anything you like without someone telling you that something else is better. It could be anything. Beer, wine, any kind of food. I mentioned the New York-style thin pizza at Russian River Brewing a decade ago on this show. I can't count the comments of people who told me that was shit, this is better. I love that pizza. Deep dish from Chicago. Napolitan. That's not true New York pizza. You name it, they said it. Don and I ate durian on YouTube. People lost their shit about how we ate it and that we drank beer with it. I filmed Don making paella on YouTube. And this dude can make some paella, trust me, it's fantastic. We got a couple hundred comments from Spanish people telling us that this wasn't paella. Everything we were doing, it was wrong. What I never expected was that people have opinions on things as inane as condiments. And I found this out when I read this short piece in Sports Illustrated, of all places. Sports Illustrated does like this one sheet every couple weeks. It's a bi-weekly magazine now. And they do a one sheet on food. And they're pretty good, you know, because food's important. It's kind of made its way into everything now. But this thing was called, it was on Mustard Wars. And if you thought you'd heard it all, listen to this shit. The subtitle is Inside the Great Debate Over Cleveland's King Condiment. So there's two here, okay? The original, the authentic stadium mustard, and then Cleveland's famous Burtman ballpark mustard. Now, if you know anything about the Cleveland Indians, you know that in the 60s, through the 60s and 80s, they sucked. They were the Cleveland Browns. And in the 90s, they got a little bit better, which is funny because toward the end of the 80s, they did that movie Major League, which was based on the Cleveland Indians, who were just the laughing stock of the league. They always sucked. So fans, the really only reason these people would go to the ballpark is to have a hot dog. And not just a hot dog. They wanted a hot dog with this mustard on it, because apparently this mustard was the best mustard. Now, you don't go to the ballpark craving a hot dog. It's something you have while you're at the ballpark. Hot dogs at a ballpark generally are the worst hot dogs you're going to find anywhere. You don't know where the hell the meat comes from. You don't really give a shit. You know, it's questionable to begin with. It's on a stale bun. The guy who's selling them is walking around with a cooler with some really nasty hot water in it. You don't know how long that's been sitting around. With a bun that's so stale, even a pigeon would say, I'm not eating that shit. But these hot dogs came slathered in mustard that it was unlike anything else. Brown, vinegary, a little sweet, had a nice aroma, and it made people happy. By the 1960s, Joe Bertman had been making this mustard for decades, and one of his salesmen, David Dwoskin, he obtained the rights to sell it to retailers. At some point, these two guys fell out, and these two recipes diverged a little bit, you know, just a tiny bit. Dwoskin launched Authentic Stadium Mustard, and suddenly, Cleveland was the site of a very unlikely culinary war. Mustard. Now, you know Michael Simon. Chef Michael Simon, talked about him a lot here. Very funny guy, really good chef. He's from Cleveland. He's been on Bourdain's show multiple times. He said, look, this is hilarious because at the end of the day, they're both great. But if he had to pick a side, he said he would go with Bertman because it's slightly more acidic, which to him enhances the mustard flavor. So today, Bertman is the one that's sold at Indians games, while Browns games feature Dwoskin Stadium mustard. And of course, each side say that they're better. A stadium mustard is a favorite of astronaut Don Thomas, who he serves it in space. You can go to the moon and have it. While conservative commenter William F. Buckley, Jr., once sent out 8 cases of Bertman as Christmas presents. Simon uses Bertman in his barbecue sauce and provided the recipe, which I'm going to share with you here. His place, Maple's Barbecue in Cleveland. He says it's a great as a glaze. So if you want to do roast fish like walleye or salmon, take a little bit of this mustard with a little soy sauce, maybe some brown sugar, glaze the fish, put it in the oven. Fantastic. But both of these mustards may be at their best over a hot dog, obviously. The thing is, if you're going to do a hot dog and do it right, yellow mustard doesn't cut it for me. And I'm not a big fan. French's, Morehouse, all that stuff. I like a good, hearty brown mustard. Dijon is great. Unfortunately, in my house, nobody likes that stuff. So yellow mustard is one of those things I have to keep around. Anyway, here is Michael Simon's recipe for Cleveland barbecue sauce. Very simple. 2 cups of apple cider vinegar, 1 small red onion peeled and quartered, 1 large clove of garlic, peeled and smashed, 1 chipotle in the adobo sauce. You see those little cans in the Mexican aisle, the Hispanic aisle? Get 1 chipotle in the adobo sauce, and then 1 tablespoon of the pureed adobo sauce. Set that aside. 3 tablespoons of bourbon, 1 teaspoon of toasted coriander seeds, 1/2 teaspoon of paprika, 1 cup of Bertman ballpark mustard, 1/2 cup of yellow mustard, 1/4 cup of pure maple syrup, 1 tablespoon of soy sauce, 2 teaspoons of kosher salt, and 1 1/2 teaspoons of freshly cracked black pepper. Place a saucepan over medium heat, add the vinegar, red onion, garlic, whole chipotle, the bourbon, coriander, and paprika, and bring that to a gentle boil. Reduce the heat to medium-low, simmer for about 10 minutes. In the meantime, in a mixing bowl, whisk together both of the mustards, the maple syrup, soy sauce, the adobo sauce, the pureed stuff, salt, and pepper. Strain the vinegar mixture over the mustard mixture, whisk them together until smooth and combined, and then chill it until you're ready to use. I know it's funny, right? I mean, look, we're all tired of the horse shit going on in D.C. Now, let's have a healthy debate about idiotic things for a change. All right, maybe it's good for us. At least no one's getting shot or going to prison over it.
Stop! Don't eat that food!
Who are you? What are you doing in our house?
I'm from the future. I'm here to warn you, don't eat that food.
Why not?
The eggs, they're full of cholesterol.
What?
Cholesterol, it clogs up your arteries. Eating even just one egg can dramatically increase your chance of heart attack. Don't eat eggs.
Oh my God, thank you.
You're welcome. Godspeed.
Well, I guess I better take those eggs.
Wait! Stop!
You're back!
Yeah. We were wrong about the eggs.
How?
Well, it turns out there's two types of cholesterol. There's good cholesterol and bad cholesterol, and eggs actually have both. So you can eat eggs, but just don't eat the egg yolks. So stick with the egg whites.
Thank you.
Yeah. Godspeed! Wait! We were wrong about the eggs!
Again?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so it turns out that the amount of cholesterol in a food doesn't actually affect how much cholesterol ends up in your blood. The eggs are probably fine. In fact, we sort of don't even know what cholesterol is. But the steak! You can't eat the steak!
Why not?
Turns out that red meat increases your chance of heart attack. You have to cut out red meat. So no steak!
Thank you.
Godspeed.
What? No, no steak, mister.
Wait! We were wrong about the steak! It's the toast. Man was not meant to eat bread.
What do you mean man was not meant to eat bread?
Well, if you think about it, human beings should really only be eating what our Paleolithic ancestors ate. So, therefore, no bread, no toast.
How do you know what our Paleolithic ancestors ate?
Well, we just have to guess, right? I mean, we don't have any way of knowing what... Okay, went back to the Paleolithic. They are not doing well. I don't know what we were thinking. If anything, we should all be eating a lot more bread. Jeez. So I guess just ignore everything I've said and exercise.
Exercise, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys could probably use it. You've been just sitting here for the last 35 years.
It's been 5 minutes.
Right. Time travel. All right, well, Godspeed! Turns out it's genetic. Doesn't matter whether you exercise or what you eat. I'm sorry I ruined your meal.
So hey, I'm having my brother Chuck on in my next episode. I just wanted to give you a heads up so you knew what was coming. I already said I was going to have a special guest on the show a few episodes ago. I thought it was going to happen sooner than I had anticipated, but he wanted to line all of his ducks up in a row before we made any formal announcement. He's starting his own business as a professional coffee roaster. He started roasting his own coffee about 10 years ago as a hobby. And this was something I wanted to do a long time ago too, when I started seeing coffee roasting equipment and raw coffee beans sold in bulk in the catalog of my homebrew supplier. But Katrina, she wasn't having it because it stinks up the house. Now, you can and should do this stuff outside, but still, she was really against it, so I never went into it. But Chuck did. And one thing you need to know about my brother, he doesn't half-ass anything. All right, if he gets into something, he goes full force, get shit right. He'll try things over and over and over until he perfects it. Now, I could save all of this for the next show, but I really think it's going to be a long one. So I at least wanted to share some of it now so you know what to expect. I grew up idolizing my brother. He was 10 years older than me. He listened to a certain style of music. I listened to that music. He talked a certain way. I talked that way. He dressed like this. I wanted to dress like this. He was in the newspaper business. I wanted to be in the newspaper business. He became a designer. I wanted to be a designer. He set the example. I followed it. And by the time I was in my early 20s, I started to find my own way. I followed that path. But he was a huge inspiration for me growing up. And to that extent, food. All right, he taught me early that being able to cook for yourself was one of life's most important skills. Now, you can be shit at housekeeping, but if you can't cook, you'll be eating out every day and you'll eventually either go broke or be unhealthy or both. The bonus and probably most important part of that discussion was that he told me that men who can cook generally get laid more. Now, you tell this to a testosterone-filled 20-year-old boy who thinks of pussy from the time he wakes up till he goes to bed, and you're basically pouring oil on the path to culinary school. All right, he had something to share. I listened carefully. Now, my brother would go to restaurants, fall in love with the food, end up talking to the chef, and then went searching for ingredients and practiced that at home until he could make it just how they made it. And that rubbed off on me. I still do that shit. Chuck taught me the value of caring enough to do those things and to do them right. So from the day I moved out on my own, I cooked. I cooked to impress my girlfriends, my mother, my brother, my friends, whoever would come to my house to eat. I never cooked to impress myself. In fact, I'm not sure I ever cared about nutrition back then. I know I didn't. You know, I mean, shit, come on. When you're young, at least when I was young, we didn't give a damn. We just ate because we had to. But we wanted to eat the good stuff. Anyway, he's roasting coffee at home for years, and his friends, his wife, in-laws, everyone's telling him how great his coffee is. Next, they're telling him it's better than any coffee you'd buy at a local roaster. Now, if you're a home brewer, this story's going to sound familiar. Your beer is free. It's good beer. All right, good beer is good beer, but free good beer is outstanding. There's something about free that makes things taste better. And my brother's aware of this, and like every friend and family member of yours that tastes your homebrew, these people are convincing Chuck that his coffee is on par, if not better, than professionally roasted coffee. I mean, how many people have tried to convince you to open a brewery because the beer you brewed for a party was so good? It happened to me. Look, I'm telling you, I love my beer, all right? But I wouldn't put it up against the upper 40% of craft beers on the market. And Michelle kicks my ass for this all the time, tells me I'm too hard on myself. But I tell her, look, I've tasted all of it, outside of West Vleteren. So I know what professional beer tastes like. I don't make that. Am I close? Maybe. But this isn't horseshoes, all right? Chuck's faced with this now. Thing about Chuck is, this motherfucker, he doesn't stop trying to achieve perfection. And as a trade-off of all of this perfectionism, he goes batshit, develops this roasting system that goes way beyond what traditional roasters are doing. He doesn't apply direct heat or even indirect heat to his beans. They're air roasted over a water bed, a liquid bed. Now, all of this, we'll get into all this in my discussion with him. But I can tell you this. He sent me some beans. And I'll tell you, not because he sent them to me for nothing, but because he wanted an honest opinion. I've had a lot of boutique coffee. All right. Don introduced me to some real gems, local roasters, some widely known stuff we've talked about on the show too. Stumptown, Intelligista, all that. You name the popular roasters, I've tasted it. And I've had the expensive stuff. I've done all the things that they tell you to do. Don't grind until you're ready to brew. Grind this particular way. This much water. This many grams of beans. Water at this temperature. I did it exactly how they told me. And their coffee? First class. Outstanding. Chuck's blew this shit apart. What I tried was called liquid amber. And it was like I was drinking nectar. I did pour over. I did French roast. Multiple espresso shots. I cupped it. I drank that shit 13 ways to Sunday. I'll be damned if it didn't have a flavor profile beyond anything else I've ever tasted. It wasn't burnt. It wasn't bitter. It was sweet without having to add sugar to it. It had complexity, depth. I tasted berries, chocolate, a first for me. There were citrus notes when I cupped the coffee. Chuck is roasting first-class gourmet coffee using fair trade beans from estate farms, beans grown the right way, by the right people, and he's paying far more for it than most roasters would. All of this is not because he's my brother, and I love him. Look, I'm saying this because it's true. I'm proud of what he's bringing to the show next episode. I cannot wait to share this with you. That's all I can tell you now, all right, because I probably said too much. Just know that what's coming next will definitely pique your interest. And as a side note, because I wanted to know how this whole process worked and what the difference would be if you decided, hey, maybe I should roast coffee, I decided to roast some coffee. the old way in an oven. And my results were less than stellar, and I'll share that with you next episode too. Now, here's the funny thing. My brother and I, we stopped talking in 1999. We had a huge falling out. When my mother died in 2004, that was the last time I saw him, and we didn't share a word then either. Sad, long story, but he moved to Washington to raise his family, and it wasn't until I saw a post from him on Twitter that I realized what he was doing, and my sister had told me he was roasting coffee, which sounded typically Chuck, so I followed him. I responded to a tweet or two, we started a conversation again, and it was as if we never stopped talking. So it's a great story, I can't wait to share all of that with you. Alright, so I've talked enough, if that's possible. Thanks for listening. Tune in next time to talk to Chuck. Follow the links on the website if you want to check out the music. MyLifeAsAFoodie.com. I'll put links to everything. You can support the artists. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. I see what's happening. I can read between the lines. It's always a punk motherfucker popping that freak shit. Thug thumb, internet gangsters, not on no street shit. Where we come from, we don't fuck with no whole leases. We pay their salary and they pay us back with mistreatment. Not meekness. Sandra Bland hanging in the cell. But just that day before, she calling her mama for bail. Hell, now they get nervous when niggas in Ferguson get the pump in the trunk, bust back and try to service them. Let's turn the table right, some brawlers in the bar fight. They killed Tamir Rice in plain sight and said it was alright. Now the people taking it to the streets because they're uptight.